What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Summer Movies Podcast. My name is Eric Davis. I am the managing editor at Movies.com, and joining me, as always, for this special Summer Movies Podcast, which is running from May through the end of August, I should note, and is about summer movies, past, present, and future. But let me backtrack, go back in time here, to welcome in my good friend Sean O'Connell. He is the movies content director at CinemaBlend.com. Sean.
Yes, sir.
What's going on?
How are you? I saw your name all over advertisements for this movie that we're going to dive into. And I'm so happy to see Eric Davis, movies.com. And I'm like, hey, I know that dude.
Yeah, you know what I was happy? I was happy they used, like, you know, I did say the best movie this summer so far.
Right.
But, you know, they could cut off, they can trim around the different quotes. Because, truth be told, we haven't seen all the summer movies yet.
Right.
But up until this point, I do feel it is the best summer movie of the season. I greatly enjoyed it. I have no problem with those quotes being used. I convinced a lot of my friends to go see this movie, and we're going to get into talking about its box office and why it wasn't as successful as maybe a lot of people wanted it to be in a few minutes.
You didn't convince enough of them to go, apparently.
I did not convince enough of them to go. But first, let's dive into some summer movie news, and then we'll get to some Edge of Tomorrow. And then we're also going to talk about underrated summer blockbusters, because I do feel like Edge of Tomorrow, in a few years from now, is going to be one of those movies where people look back at this year, and the X-Men's and the Godzilla's, and people are going to be like, oh, you know, Edge of Tomorrow was really, really good. And so what are some other blockbusters that people maybe forget about that are really good and that you love watching? But aren't in the conversation as much as they should be. So let's go into some summer movie news. I feel like the last four episodes of this podcast, we've talked about Marvel's Ant-Man. And now it has a director.
It does. It's Peyton Reed. And I hear all of you asking who Peyton Reed is. And this might have been, I think, a very exciting hire 10 to 15 years ago, maybe. His biggest movie that he directed, and it's even funny to say this, is probably Bring It On.
Yeah.
Which is a cheerleader versus cheerleader movie that he did back in 2000. But then since then, he's been busy with, he's done television work. He did The Breakup with Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston, which is actually an underrated film.
It is. Did he do Where the Millers too, right?
No.
That was Ross and Thurlow.
Who was also in the mix.
I'm getting all these guys confused right now. There was like a ton of them.
At this point, we've gone through so many. And that's what the problem is. Like, if Marvel had come out and said from the get-go, hey, Peyton Reed showed us something, you know, with his pitch for Ant-Man, and we just love what he's bringing to the table for it, then I'd be – I guess I could get kind of excited for it. He did Yes Man with Jim Carrey. He did Down with Love, which a lot of people are pointing at, which is back in 2003. But because we know, like, this is one of the problems where with Marvel, you know, seeing how the sausage gets made, because this was on display for so long, and we know how many directors they went through and how many people passed, that it can't help but feel that in a bit of a panic mode, you know, they settled, it's such an insult, but that they settled on a guy who, after all these other people that they went to kind of said no, this guy was the one willing to say yes and stay on schedule.
Yeah, you know, I you know what I think about this movie, and it's probably bad to think about this, but I think about in 5 years from now, or even less, we're just hearing this of what Ant-Man would have looked like, you know, because you know there's tons of art for Edgar Wright's version, you know there's scripts for Edgar Wright's version, you know Edgar Wright has his own every. I mean, that movie was days away from production when this all happened. So it was all completely done. There's got to be so much of that movie that's probably exists that you can see. And so I feel like it's difficult because Edgar Wright is such a fan favorite, and it's going to be hard for people to sort of remove this movie now from him and just kind of judge it just for what it is and not what it could have been. I hope they do. I'm going to certainly do everything in my power to do that. I mean, I love what Marvel's put out. So it's hard to say, yeah, this is the bumpiest road, I think, that they've had when it comes to a movie. I think probably Iron Man 2 would be second to this one.
Right.
But you know, you hope that they're really smart people over there. And one interesting thing about this is that, yeah, they brought in Peyton Reed to direct, but Adam McKay, who is also up for the director job, is now helping to rewrite the script.
But that's the part I don't understand. Because Edgar left because they came at him with these revisions from everything that we've heard. And they wanted to change what he had initially planned to do. But then wouldn't that suggest – that suggests to me that Marvel has a script that they want to shoot now, you know? That this is what they want to do. This is the direction they want to go in.
Yeah.
So what is Adam McKay going to do?
Well, you know what that sort of reeks of to me? That kind of reeks of Paul Rudd sort of saying, you know, wanting to bring one of his quote-unquote people in to do a little bit of rejigging here and there. I would think that would be the situation because it was interesting as we were seeing these director names, there would always be one director that was kind of random and then one director that was connected to Paul Rudd in some way. And so Adam McKay, I feel like, is connected to Paul Rudd. He kind of runs in the same circles. Rudd has, of course, been in the Anchorman movies. So I think Paul Rudd was probably in on some of these discussions, and he probably wanted Adam McKay. Adam McKay probably didn't want to direct it, and I could see why. They're not going to let him play like he usually plays around on set. But they may say, you know what, we like some of your ideas, we like some of the jokes that you came up with, because they probably had a meeting with him, he probably pitched them some ideas, and they probably liked some of those ideas. They may have said, you know what, some of your ideas are better than the ideas that we have. Why don't you come on, rewrite some of these scenes, but we'll have somebody else come and direct the movie. So,
what about this? Point to one thing in this whole story that we've laid out that shows me that this is how you should make a movie.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know if not all of the behind the scenes on movies are public are on display for the public. You know, these Marvel movies are so big right now, and there's so much talk online about them that it's hard to make any decision.
Yeah.
With these movies and not have it all over the place. I think truth be told, I'm sure a lot of these movies go through crazy behind the scenes things that we just never see because they're hidden well. I know Edge of Tomorrow is one of those movies that came out this weekend, and you know, thankfully it turned out great, but that's a movie that I believe went through crazy rewrites. They were writing the script as they were shooting it. They didn't even have an ending when they started production. And so, you know, these are stories that, you know, this is coming out after the movie came out, so they don't have to deal with that. But yeah, you know, I think whenever a movie goes back for reshoots, you get the whole why are they reshooting? It's coming out in 3 months. What are they afraid of? You know, so I think there's a lot of stories that happen throughout any given year, you know, and there's so much pressure on these movies as well. So,
well, and the one thing that can correct it all is a great movie. So
yeah.
If Ant-Man comes out and it's a ton of fun and they nail it, they get the tone right and it sets up, you know, more chapters of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm not saying that we're never going to have the conversation of, boy, what happened to Edgar Wright again? But if they can deliver a movie that wipes all this clear, then good on them.
Yes. And I'm curious. I was jonesing to kind of see Edgar Wright take on one of these big, super popular franchise movies.
Sure.
And I hope this doesn't scare him away from possibly doing another one.
Right.
Because I kind of like to see him do something like this. I love his visual aesthetic. I think he's so much fun to watch as a director.
Right.
You know one of his movies. And I would love to see him kind of take a big, giant summer movie and play around with it. So I hope that he does do one of those. Let's move on fast. July 1st, 2015, next summer, the big 4th of July weekend movie of 2015 is going to be Terminator Genesis. Revisit of the Terminator franchise, all new cast, doing a bunch of fun things. Some set photos have been floating around online last week. We're seeing some Arnold Schwarzenegger in makeup. He's, of course, returning. We've been seeing Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones. We've been seeing Jai Courtney. We saw some pictures of them.
Right.
Not a small cast,
not completely new. We got one familiar face.
Yes. I'm curious to just hear, you know, what's your thought on this film? I feel like this movie is going to sort of follow in the footsteps of Days of Future Past in a way, and it's going to, you're going to time travel around some of our favorite moments of the first movies, but they're going to reinvent it in some way, I think? I mean, what do you know about this movie, and what can you share, and what is your feeling about it?
I'm keeping an open mind, because I think that the one franchise that is helping me keep an open mind about this is the Fast and Furious franchise, which...
Yes.
By the time we got to a fifth one, I didn't care if I ever saw another one again. And they figured out how to improve the storytelling in that franchise. And to the point now where, you know, the next Fast and Furious movies for the next few years are legitimately anticipated projects. But the third and fourth ones were not good. And a friend of mine who is, you know, really opposed to this Terminator franchise is saying, you know, we had one good sequel in his mind, and that's Judgment Day, you know, Terminator 2.
Yeah.
And the third and the fourth ones were disappointments for different reasons. So why do we keep going back to this storyline? And especially, why do we keep going back to it if it's not James Cameron who's bringing us back to it? So would I rather see, you know, Cameron with an idea and coming back to it? Yeah, absolutely. But if they can figure out some way to almost reinvent themselves in the way that the Fast and Furious movies did, and if they have an idea, from what I'm hearing, you know, it's going to involve older Schwarzenegger playing an older version of his Terminator, so they don't have to sort of do prosthetics to make him look younger, to make him look like he did when they initially shot. But they're going to use time travel so that, you know, the different versions of these characters that we know are going to punch into the storyline at places that we've already seen, like that we witnessed, and see them sort of interacting in a Back to the Future 2 kind of way, you know, with multiple Marty McFlys and things like that. That's intriguing to me, but I'm still just really confused by the fact that they hired a John Connor, who is kind of the same age as the actress who's playing his mom. And so I don't know if they're going to pluck like John Connor from one part of the timeline and Sarah from another part of the timeline and old Arnold. And part of me, I don't want to know. You know, I want to go into it and sort of be, you know, completely surprised by what they come out with. But so for now, open mind. I don't think we needed more Terminator movies in the same way that I didn't necessarily need another Jurassic Park movie. But if we're going to get it, I hope that they have great ideas that have warranted a revisiting of these franchises.
Yeah, you know, James Cameron is sort of involved in a very, very tiny way. I know that he's been quoted as saying that they've asked him, they talked to him about the movie, and yeah, he gave them advice specifically on how to use Arnold in it.
Oh, okay.
And I think from what I gathered from that quote, it sounds like they're using his advice. I know they've asked Arnold how they're going to work in an older version of him into the film. He says, quote, "The way the character is written, it's a machine underneath. It's this metal skeleton. But above that is human flesh. And the Terminator's flesh ages just like any other human being's flesh. Maybe not as fast, but it definitely ages." So... I don't know if that was Cameron's idea. I have no idea. I guess maybe after the movie comes out and we've separated ourselves from a little while and James Cameron's doing some press for his next three Avatar movies, maybe they'll ask him, so what exactly from that movie was your idea? And he's pretty outspoken. I'm sure he'll say, in this scene, that's the idea that I gave them.
Are you excited about more Terminator movies?
I am. You know, I just like time travel stories just because it gets everybody all in a flutter.
Right.
The time travel stories. People get all crazy when it comes to those kinds of stories. And, you know, I'm someone, you know, I look at the Terminator and I see Fast and Furious as a good comparison. I think the Terminator's mythology is a little bit richer.
Yeah.
And it's been around for a little bit longer. So I think people are protective of it. But I've always dug it. I'm curious to see. I feel like Arnold, since he's made his comeback to movies, still hasn't really given us like a great, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know? I'm hoping that this is cool.
I don't know why. I just would feel better if they were going to come up with the time travel aspect of it and punch in and out of the existing movies, if we just had different characters. I don't like that it always has to be John and Sarah Connor. And I guess they're pivotal to the initial mythology. But if this is going to be the start of a trilogy like that, they're saying this is going to be the launch pad for a whole new trilogy of stories.
Yeah, why are we with the same exact characters that we've been with for all these movies?
Yeah, I'd like to go someplace different with it. And because, like you said, the mythology is pretty rich in the Skynet story, and there are all these things that you can tell. There are other people involved in this universe. We should meet them at some point.
Yeah, no, I would personally love to see either a television series or another series of movies that are all sort of take place in the Terminator world, but are just other stories of other people and how they're dealing with it. You know, it's funny. I always see movies like Her, and I'm like, that could be a Terminator prequel. You know, before the machines took over, this is sort of what was happening. So I don't know. I would love to see like probably it would work best as like a Netflix series or something. You know, when you could be a little bit rougher, a little bit edgier than primetime television, right. And just tell stories of what's happening in the world and how other people are dealing with it. It would be cool to see.
Well, we'll see how it all shakes out.
Speaking of things that are cool to see, I loved Edge of Tomorrow. I haven't even talked to you about this movie yet. I know you saw it last week. Did you like it? Did you dig it?
I loved it. I thought it was great. And it's so funny. Like, I went into it with so much hype because the reviews had been off the charts positive, and I was like, it can't really be as much fun as everyone's making it out to be. And it just was. It was so great. It was a cruise in total movie star mode, really smart, funny in places it needed to be funny. It had all the components of a winning summer blockbuster, and so of course no one went to go see it.
I know. And it's funny, one of my favorite things about it is that Cruise is like a coward in it, and I think he said he's never played a coward before in his life, and you look back at all of his roles and he's kind of right. He always, you know, yeah, he plays characters that go through various different arcs and stuff, but he always starts out as like a confident person.
Right.
And yeah. this one, he's not. And I really like that about him. I like that he did something different and he played sort of this wacky, like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm way over my head. I can't fight for anything, you know. And I like that. And I like how it was a female warrior who taught him how to be a badass. I think that's, I love how Tom Cruise took that role and put himself in that position.
Like, going into the story, because you're like ahead of the curve of knowing that it has to be resetting the day, you have to wait for the movie to sort of catch up to where you're already at, because it has to explain all this to Cruise's character.
Yeah.
And I thought the movie did a really funny job of every time he got reintroduced to the platoon, how he knew all the things about them, and all that stuff was still very funny. I didn't mind having to sit through that to get to the point where the movie could finally start going.
Yeah.
And it's... there were even really clever ways. Now, we're going to talk about spoilers, I guess, as we'll warn everybody that we're going to talk openly about spoilers here. So if you haven't seen Edge of Tomorrow and you still want to be surprised by it, turn off the podcast right now or bookmark us and come back to it later. But there were even some great nods, like late in the story, where, you know, Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt are having a moment and she starts to realize that they've been in that day multiple times. And the movie doesn't show it to us, but at least explains that, like, this is how long this guy's been trapped in this loop. And it was another reminder of just how smart the movie was. And it didn't have to spoon feed everything to the audience. It was kind of just like, we're going to move at this pace and keep up with us because you're going to be rewarded by some really cool things.
Yeah, no, the editing was spectacular in a film. I feel like the editing is so important in a movie like this because you need to, every scene that we see multiple times has to kind of be delivered to us in different ways in order to hold our attention. Right. And I just thought the editing was terrific on it. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, come Oscar time and, you know, some of these big movies do get nominated for Oscars like editing and best effects and stuff like that. I'd love to see it sort of in the mix there. But, yeah, it didn't do that well at the box office, Sean. And this is a film that decided, you know what, we're going to come out early. We're proud of it. I saw this movie a couple of weeks back, and they let us write about it. And they've been promoting it, and it's been all over the NBA Finals, I think. It was all over the Stanley Cup Finals. And yet, it's $29 million for the weekend. Third place against Fault in Our Stars, which we thought, $48 million, that one. Maleficent beat Edge of Tomorrow. Second place at the box office with $33 million. Edge of Tomorrow is third place. Why is that? Why is a film, it's got Tom Cruise, one of the most popular actors ever, and it's got rave reviews, great word of mouth buzz on it. Why did it open up number three?
I don't have an answer, because my initial answer was that it doesn't have like a franchise behind it. It's not X-Men. It's not Godzilla. It's not Spider-Man. It doesn't have a recognizable person that you could point to and say, this is the reason why. But I mean, the movies that beat it this weekend negate that argument. I mean, Maleficent
Well, not to a certain. I mean, Fault in Our Stars is based on a very popular YA novel, and Maleficent is based on an iconic Disney character. So, I mean, both right there have built-in fan bases of different kinds.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I guess. I wouldn't put the YA novel, you know, ahead of Tom Cruise. I still thought Tom Cruise had the star power. Because then I'd point at Angelina Jolie, and I would say that Maleficent's doing really well based on her star power and her ability to draw an audience. And Cruise has been struggling. I mean, he couldn't bring people to Jack Reacher. He couldn't bring people to Oblivion. I still deem him as a huge movie star, but I just don't know if that's the case anymore.
Do you think it's the weekend? Do you think if this movie opened up in I don't know, December, or if it opened up on a different weekend, maybe in March?
No, all I can say is, no, I don't think so, because Reacher was a December opening, and people didn't go to see that either. And that also had great reviews.
It was awesome.
And Tom Cruise.
I love that movie.
And this had great reviews and Tom Cruise. And anybody that I spoke to, I did a lot of TV, I did a lot of radio leading up to it, and anyone I spoke to, they were like, I hear this is really good, but Tom Cruise. And I'm like, why?
What?
I don't get that. I don't understand his personal baggage, which honestly has been years, you know, since the jumping on the couch and the, you know, confronting Matt Lauer and all these things. People still just can't get over that he could potentially be in a great movie, which is insane because he's delivered great movies, you know, year upon year upon year. And if you can't put the baggage of an actor that they bring to the screen, listen, I get it's really difficult if they've committed a heinous crime or something like that. But Cruise is just—he's guilty of being strange or quirky or offbeat, and part to me that's what makes him interesting.
Yeah, he's not doing anything wrong. He's doing his thing. The guy looks like a cool guy to hang out with, to be honest with you.
And I would cheat myself of a good movie because of, you know, some actor did something crazy. Yeah. I just want to see a character, and I want to see a story told, and I can't think of anyone. Who, now, if they're a bad actor, I don't want to watch a bad actor. But if someone's in a movie and it's getting rave reviews, I'm the type of person who's going to check it out. I'm not going to let some sort of personal bias be like, oh, I don't like that actor. He's crazy off screen.
Yeah, it's a really strange sort of thing. And you'd think at this point, especially after a May that was full of movies that were attached to existing franchises, you would think that people would be like, hey, here's something original. Right. To a degree, it is based on a novel, but it's, you know, people aren't very familiar with the novel. But, you know, here's sort of an original movie that people are really digging. Critics are really liking it. You know, it sort of boggles my mind. But
okay, so tell me about this then. Positive reviews. What do they have an impact? What impact do they have? This is a 90% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah,
and it couldn't open big. I mean, that's troubling because it sort of seems to me that even if the critical consensus is this is a great movie, people should go see it, people didn't want to see it.
No. So I you know, I don't know. There are some movies where you can point to the word of mouth and the critics and say buzz is strong, that's why it's doing so well.
Yeah.
And then there are some movies like this one where it's like buzz is strong, it's been going strong for a couple of weeks, you know, maybe you know, then you could say maybe they started a little bit too early with the full-on press. And maybe if they started the week of and kind of got people. I feel like a lot of people don't make those decisions until maybe an hour before they see a movie.
All right. Let me ask a question. What does Cruise have to do? What do you think he has to do next to reclaim some audience?
Well, I mean, I know he's going to do another Mission Impossible movie. And yeah. That's going to make a lot of money. Ghost Protocol, I think, is one of my favorite movies that he's ever made. I love Ghost Protocol. And Christopher McQuarrie is directing it. He also did a rewrite on Edge of Tomorrow. And so that partnership I'm really excited about. And, aside from the Mission Impossible franchise, I don't know what Cruise has to do. You know what I'd like to see Cruise do, personally? I'd like to see him kind of in one of these hardcore, maybe film festival, awards contending dramas. And right. See him return to that and give us like a real juicy performance that he can really chew on. You know, not something like Rock of Ages where he's just completely bombastic and out and, you know, and having crazy fun, because we've seen that recently. Not some crazy big sci-fi action movie, because we are seeing a lot of those from him lately. But something like A Few Good Men.
Right.
Something where he gets a lot of scenery to chew on. Yeah, well, that's what I'd like to see.
He did Lions for Lambs in 2007 with Redford. And he did Collateral in 2004. But since then, like since 2004, it's just been blockbuster, blockbuster, blockbuster. War of the Worlds, Valkyrie, Night and Day, Ghost Protocol, like you mentioned. He hasn't picked a small part, you know, in a dramatic feature where the collaboration with the director has been the bait for him. Yeah. And I think you're right. It's time to get back to that.
I think people want to see that. I think people want to see a film. And I think if he can do that, and get back into maybe an awards contention or something, that could give him a little bit of a rejuvenation.
Well, and I agree with that too. If the critics were bashing this, if they were like, "Oh, enough with the blockbuster nonsense, Cruise, get back to your acting." But he was getting great reviews for this too. People were saying it was a great performance by him. They were praising the screenplay. The effects were unbelievable. I mentioned it was some of the best 3D I've seen since Avatar.
It was really good.
Oh, it was great. It was so good. So I hope you're right. I hope word of mouth is really strong. And I hope that audiences came out of it and told a friend, hey, listen, get over your bias and give this a try. And that it does pretty well for the next few weeks. Because, I mean, it has a little bit of wiggle room until Transformers drops. I mean, we have 22 Jump Street and Jersey Boys coming up. But Edge could be the summer blockbuster effects-driven thing that people want to pay to see until Transformers comes.
Yeah, maybe everybody was like, you know, I have to see The Fault in our Stars this weekend. I have to. But next weekend, I'll go see Edge of Tomorrow because people are really digging it.
I don't miss out on a Shailene Woodley on a weekend.
Cannot miss a Woodley opening. I got to get my cry on.
So our answer is that we have no answer.
We have no answer.
Didn't do well.
Go see it, though, if you haven't seen it.
Please, go see it.
But you know what? And speaking of films that sort of are really good films, but don't really get talked about as much in terms of their summer blockbustery kind of movies, what's one of your favorite, I guess, underrated summer blockbusters that people don't talk about enough that you just love? And watch a lot.
This one, but I don't know if it's like a blockbuster type standard, but I'm going to, and his name is in the press a ton and I get it, but this seemed like one of his better films that people didn't give a chance to. And I'm going to go with the J.J. Abrams' Super 8, which we've watched a ton since then because my kids are so into Goonies and they want something that's along the lines of Goonies, of kids on an adventure type thing.
So do I. Tell your kids that. I want one of those too. I want one of those too. I love those movies.
We've circled Earth to Echo, which is coming out later this summer, and I hope that that's going to be one of those types of films. Super 8 did okay, and it didn't even have a lot of competition. Like, I went back and looked to see the things that opened alongside of it, and it wasn't anything really major. It ended up making $127 million at the box office on a $50 million budget, which is good, but it's certainly not one of those films I don't think that people still talk about and that still gets a lot of play in terms of, you know, launching the careers of certain actors. Or, like, to Abrams, it seemed like a little bit of a palate cleanse between his massive franchises. And obviously, he's been swallowed up by the Star Wars machine now, and that's great. But I think Super 8 deserves to get a lot more credit than it should have. Maybe stay in the discussion of some of those early Spielberg ones where the director was just starting to really feel what he could play around with and how to work with actors. And if you've got kids, you know, probably in the 10 to 11 age, and they're buying into things like E.T., Close Encounters, Goonies, things like that, it felt like an Amblin film from back in the day, and I think it deserves more love.
Didn't it open up on, like, the same weekend?
June 10th, it was. And its competition the weekend that it opened was Judy Moody and the Not Bummer Summer.
Yeah, you know what's funny? The movie I'm going to pick... Yes. Also came out the same weekend, June 7th.
That's nice. What'd you get?
And I'm thinking, like, is it the weekend? Is it this specific weekend that is just not very kind to big effects sort of driven movies?
Well, you're coming off of Memorial Day, which I think is a big trip to the theater for casual summer blockbuster fans. They'll go see whatever the big movie is, and a lot of people went to go see X-Men. So, yeah, I mean, it's very possible that people who spent money on the movies for Memorial Day weekend don't want to go right back to it. They're moving on to something else. They're barbecuing. They're doing anything but going to the movies again. It's possible.
It's weird. I do think it's a little interesting that the movie I'm picking is a Michael Bay movie.
Okay.
And it is The Rock.
Ugh.
I loved Rock. But I feel like The Rock... When people talk about Michael Bay movies, I feel like The Rock is never really mentioned. Or if it's mentioned, it's always like third or fourth or fifth. And, oh, yeah, he made The Rock. Oh, that Michael Bay made that movie? The one with Nicolas Cage, Sean Connery? But I love this movie. I remember I owned the soundtrack to this movie in college. And my buddy and I used to, like, blast it in our dorm room.
Right.
To get us, like, pumped up, you know, to go to, like, English class.
Yep.
Yeah, we got to go take a final. Let's go listen to The Rock soundtrack.
Was it Michael Mancini who did the Rock soundtrack? I wonder. Hold on.
I don't know. But type it up. Hans Zimmer.
Was it Zimmer?
Yeah, it was the Zim.
Nice.
You think about it. It's a Zim soundtrack. But you know what? It opened pretty well. I think its entire run, it was $134 million domestic. It opened with $25 million, which at that time was enough to give it the number one ranking for the weekend. So that actually did open up number one. But on June 7th, this is 1996. But I don't know. Don't you feel like out of all of Michael Bay's movies, this is one that I think this is one of his best, if not his best movie, and it doesn't get a fair shake. People don't talk about it as much.
I agree with that to a certain extent. To me, I loved the first Bad Boys, and that to me gets overlooked because the sequel was so over the top gratuitous.
Yeah.
But yeah, The Rock is one of the, like, when The Rock came out in 1996, I agree with you, it wasn't yet a faux pas to say that you loved a Michael Bay movie. Like, people were still on board, and they were like, yeah, that's all, he's going to be awesome. Pearl Harbor sort of dinged that a little bit, and Bad Boys 2 dinged it a little bit, and then people who aren't, you know, a fan of what he's doing with Transformers sort of sullied his name. But you're totally right. When The Rock was out and Bay was delivering, you know, firing on all cylinders at that point, it was cool to say that you loved his style. And he wasn't bloating himself yet. I think that was still like a lean 2-hour movie. And it's not these 3-hour epics that he cranks out now.
And this may have even been like our last great Sean Connery role. Because if you're looking after The Rock,
right,
he did The Avengers, which not Marvel's The Avengers, but that really weird The Avengers movie, Playing by Heart, Entrapment, which of course we know from the Catherine Zeta-Jones.
That was popular,
but it was okay. Finding Forrester, actually, that was pretty good. I liked Finding Forrester.
Yeah, sure.
And then you have The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Good Lord.
And that was pretty much it. And then he did this Sir Bill, this weird animated movie that he did the voice for. But
was Nick Cage before he became this gonzo scenery chewing character?
Yeah.
You had obviously great villains in Ed Harris. I don't know if I'd let you argue that it's underrated. I think a lot of people like The Rock a lot, but yeah, it deserves more attention.
It does deserve more attention. It deserves more cable replay. Like right now, I want that music.
I loved how he used green. Green in that movie is pretty fantastic. It was when Bay was really experimenting with like two color palettes, like a blue and a green and everything. So
also has a wicked car chase through the streets of San Francisco.
Yeah.
Which I really like. Really cool car chase.
I'm going to go pop that in.
You want to go watch The Rock now, don't you?
I know you do. Yeah. And I have it. Of course I have it.
You know, I just think about that movie. I just miss Sean Connery. I wish he didn't retire.
Tell us your underrated ones. Get in the comment section and tell us your underrated movies.
Tell us your underrated summer blockbusters. What summer blockbuster do you watch, do you love, that nobody talks about anymore?
Tell us why you think Edge failed. I want to hear other people's theories.
Yeah, I want to hear. I want to know why that movie failed, too.
Because we had nothing. We had no legit reasons.
Tom Cruise. Well, if you're listening, Tom, you did a great job. We loved it. But yes, thank you once again for listening to the Summer Movies Podcast. We'll be back next week.
Jump Street.
I love 22 Jump Street. Did you see it yet?
I haven't seen it yet. We're about to curve yet again.
We will talk about that next week. I really, really like that movie. And it's funny because I assigned a couple of features for this movie that after I saw the movie, I was like, the movie sort of negates these features, but it'll be fun anyway. It's a funny movie. Really good. I think, to be honest with you, and I love the first one, I like it better than the first one.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
So there you go. There's your teaser. Sean O'Connell.
Yes, sir.
He is the movie's content director at cinemablend.com. Go over there and read all kinds of stuff from Sean, because there's all sorts of fun stuff over at Cinema Blend. They really dig in to movies from various angles, and I dig it. My name is Eric Davis. I am the managing editor at movies.com. Come over to movies.com as well and hang out with us. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoy your week and weekend at the movies. We'll be back here next Monday. Take care. Goodbye. Good night.